spells and it to rain fire and. Yeah, BFFs forever. Good morning, everybody. We're just getting warmed up here. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, 2012. It's 9:30 a.m., and the City Council will come to order. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed. We have one communications. Can you please read the title for item number 72?
Request of Tina Lyons to address council regarding city support of small business.
Ms. Lyons, please come forward. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Here.
Please, you just all you need to do is give us your first and last name and that clock right there on that big hunk of wood. That'll help you count down 3 minutes. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Tina Lyons. And
can you get the mic a little closer to you? Thank you.
Appreciate I'm the owner of Double River Forwarding. Again, my name is Tina Lyons. Our company operates like a travel agency for export cargo, which mostly consists of agricultural commodities. I'm here before you today to thank you for your efforts to support small businesses and to encourage you to continue them. I want to share with you my business story. 4 years ago next week, I left my regular employment at a local company to start my own. After saying I would never run my own company, I made this decision because I felt customers deserved better service than I was able to offer them working at another company. In addition, I wanted the chance to create a supportive, progressive workplace. Our company has created one full-time position. We have had part-time employees off and on over the years, and we will soon be adding a permanent part-time position. We also take advantage of many local services for our accounting, advertising, and payroll. We currently work out of my home, but will soon be looking for office space. Many people move to Portland because our city can offer them a great quality of life. Some of them start new businesses. We should do everything we can to support those startups and help them grow into companies that employ others. As a member of the Small Business Council at the Portland Business Alliance, I've seen my colleagues take advantage of programs at the Small Business Development Center and secure funding from the Portland Development Commission. I have seen how it has supported and encouraged them. Thank you again, Mayor and Commissioners, for your commitments to programs such as these and for your continued commitment to small business and job growth in general. Since our city's economy is significantly tied to the growth and success of small business, and nearly three-quarters of the net new jobs in Portland are created by them, I ask that you please continue to advocate for a favorable business environment by reducing taxes and fees that are burdensome for small business. Our success depends on your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And what's the name of your business?
Double River Forwarding.
And where is it located?
In Portland by the airport.
And any sales today, two-for-one sales on expediting, website address?
It depends on the situation and where you're going.
How would people contact to get in touch with you?
On the internet.
And what's the URL?
It is double-river.com.
Double-river.com.
Yes.
And the kind of work that you're the kind of services that your company provides includes?
Documentation for export.
And would you say you're the best at that in the entire city?
We are the best at agriculture and personal effects shipments in the entire city.
Well, thank you for creating jobs for others. Thanks for creating a business to support yourself and your family. Congratulations.
Thank you for hearing me.
You bet. Congratulations. All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any item to pull from the consent agenda? All right, Carla, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have three time certains, beginning with item number 73, which is a resolution.
Declare intent to initiate local improvement district formation proceedings to construct street and stormwater improvements in the Northeast 112th Avenue and Mark Street Local Improvement District.
Welcome back, Mr. Abbey.
Thank you, Mayor.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
What are we looking at here?
Okay, Mayor Adams, council members, I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. When Carla's done passing out the hard copies of the presentation, I'll switch over to it and walk you through this complex project. And Carla, if we could switch to the presentation. Okay, this is the resolution of intent for the Northeast 112th Avenue and Mark Street Local Improvement District. And here's an overview map to give you an idea of where this project is. It's in the Park Rose neighborhood, and it's north of Sandy Boulevard, east of 205. If this area looks familiar, it's because council approved an LID several years ago to construct Northeast 109th Avenue, three blocks away. That project is now complete. So we have about 60 centerline miles of dirt and gravel streets in the city, but over 300 centerline miles of paved streets in the city also lack curbs and drainage. So that's a little over 15% of the streets in the city of Portland. Most of them are in East Portland and Southwest Portland. Park Rose, obviously, is in East Portland. This particular area is also in a freight district area and is within the boundaries of the Columbia Corridor Association. So what you're looking at here is an aerial overview of the project. This is an industrial area. A lot of small businesses here. This is a map of the project support per the project as originally petitioned. So in the perfect world, what the three infrastructure bureaus, transportation, water, and BES would like to do is to improve Northeast 112th Avenue as well as all of Mark Street between Northeast 105th Avenue and Northeast 112th Avenue. We received $2,367,000 worth of petition support for this project, or 37% of the project as originally petitioned. There was a previous effort to form an LID in 1995 and 1996. At that time, three major property owners had delinquent liens representing nearly 15% of the estimated assessment, so the LID did not move forward at that time. Since that time, property ownership has turned over, and only one property currently has a delinquency. And if you adopt a substitute resolution, which I'll explain in a moment, then that delinquency would no longer factor into the LID. So after 17 years of waiting, the recommendation to council was to finally approve this LID. Then,
and what's the petition support now?
The petition support per the original proposal is 37%. But I will explain to you the modified proposal that I'm asking council to adopt. And that's shown here on the next slide. So the substitute resolution that I prepared for your consideration would drop Mark Street from 105th to 109th Avenue from the scope of this LID. It only decreases petition support by $189,000 since most of our petition support was east of 109th Avenue. So the result of that, Commissioner Salzman, is to more than double the petition support to 77% if the substitute resolution is adopted. Moving on to the next slide, just to kind of zoom in on the changes that the substitute resolution would make. We heard from the Columbia Shore Opportunity Group that not paving in the P zone was very important to them. So the proposed substitute would eliminate the street work from the environmental protection zone. So if you look at this slide here, you can see that crosshatched area is the environmental protection area. That dash pink circle there is where the cul-de-sac would be built. And instead, the north end of the street would be built at the north line of tax lot 100 where you see that solid pink line. So the north end of 112th Avenue would be built later upon redevelopment of the Buckaroo Thermoseal property, and that would be done entirely at their own expense. They have already participated in the Northeast 109th Avenue LID, which we closed out last year. So moving on to the next slide, this shows the other major change. I mentioned earlier that the substitute resolution would drop marks between 105th and 109th. The other change that the substitute resolution would make would be on Mark Street between 109th and 112th. We got no petition support on the south side of the street. So I think we came up with a very creative solution here, which is we would still put in the new storm sewer in Mark Street. The eventual build-out of Mark Street is 44 feet wide, but what we're proposing to do is to build 22 feet on the north side with no parking in the interim on the north side and allow two-way traffic. So all of the traffic on the street would have a new, fully improved street. The south 22 feet of Mark Street would be built later upon redevelopment. The storm sewer would already be in place, so it would be a relatively easy thing for those properties to do when they redevelop. And in the interim, when we don't have parking on the north side of the street, people could still park on the south side of the street on the gravel shoulder. So one thing that's very important to note is that the properties on the south side of the street would not be completely eliminated from assessment. So their assessments are proposed to be reduced by 93%. So what the substitute resolution does is to charge your property owners on the south side of the street for one half the cost of a storm sewer. And this is a very large storm sewer. It's a 21-inch concrete storm sewer that we're proposing to build. And couple of quick things to note, if property owners can't dispose of stormwater on site, the capacity of this storm sewer will allow them to, as a last resort, to use the new storm sewer for stormwater disposal. In the words of one property owner whose frontage would not be improved, he would really like to improve it, but doesn't have the resources to do it right now. In the meantime, he'll keep getting by with pontoon boats on the street. You'll see some pictures here in a minute that address that stormwater situation. So here's an overview of the LID. As petition, we were proposing to do all of 112th north of Marks. As proposed, we're proposing to build most of 112th, but eliminate the cul-de-sac at the north end in the P-zone. We were planning to build all of Marks from 105th to 112th. Certainly the Maintenance Bureau really wanted us to do that, but the compromise proposal would be to build one half of Mark between 109th and 112th. In terms of the assessment rate per square foot, just a slight adjustment from $5.28 to $5.18 for most property owners remaining in the LID. As I mentioned, the property owners on the south side of Mark get a significant reduction to $0.37 per square foot for the stormwater benefit that they immediately see. And again, here's a recap of the petition support. We started out with 37%. If you adopt this substitute resolution, we more than double that, 77%, and we've got a little bit of waiver support thrown in there as well. So here are the pictures. These are the existing conditions. These are some pictures of Northeast 112th Avenue. You can see that this area suffers from blight. We've had complaints about vagrancy, prostitution, drug use, and other criminal activity. I'll be passing, one of the property owners will be speaking to this in a moment. He's with us today. And as you can see from the pothole there, the pavement there is in very bad condition. 112th and Marks are what I would call our frequent flyer streets. The Maintenance Bureau out there is very frequently. I just saw them out there yesterday. Those streets are in the worst 10% of the streets in the city. And maintenance has gone out there 57 times in the last 5 years to try to put patches on it. One thing I want to mention is even if somehow maintenance could fix this pavement, it would do nothing for the stormwater issues about which your property owners have been complaining. So 112th and Marks were built at a time when that predated the industrial zoning and development in this area and were never designed to accommodate heavy trucks. So the goal of this project is to build sustainable infrastructure that doesn't require constant maintenance. Moving on to the next slide, here's another picture of 112th Avenue. You can see the stormwater just runs onto private property. This is one of the very few existing residential properties left in the area. Moving on to the next slide here, this is around the corner on Mark Street. We affectionately call it Lake Marks in the wintertime. BES is going to provide a fixed contribution of $100,000 towards this project, and that's not a new expenditure for BES. That is money that BES has already budgeted for a sump modification project that would provide a regulatory fix. We can now eliminate that and instead redirect the money to build a green street as a long-term, sustainable, and comprehensive stormwater management solution. And then moving on to the next slide, this is yet another picture of Mark Street. You can see the truck trying to turn out onto the street. You can see that picture in the lower left corner. Water just simply pools there when we have heavy rainfall. This area is within the Columbia South Shore Wellhead Protection Area, and the purpose of that program is to maintain the quality of the groundwater used as drinking water and set minimum standards for groundwater protection. So you can see there's no stormwater management or containment here, so everything that falls on the street makes its way into the groundwater table, and that will change when we build this project. And then here's yet another picture of Northeast Mark Street, just to kind of give you a flavor for what we're dealing with. This particular block is between 105th and 109th. You can see that there's a real need to improve this block. So I just want to emphasize the substitute resolution postpones the need for infrastructure improvements on Mark between 105th and 109th, but it certainly doesn't eliminate it. However, by building that storm sewer from the Whitaker Slough all the way down 112th of Mark and then around the corner to 109th, this put the storm sewer very close to these properties so that if they do want to extend the improvements in the future, much less costly exercise to do that. And I just wanted to close by showing you the Northeast 109th Avenue LID that we closed out here at Council last year. This picture was taken on the same day as most of the other pictures, and you can see that there's no standing water on the street, and all that water is being properly managed. That picture in the lower left-hand corner is one of our swales that's functioning quite well, and that particular project came in 39% below budget. So happy to answer any questions you might have, and I have quite a bit of written testimony to pass out, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any initial questions? Has anyone signed up to testify?
Yes, we have three people signed up.
Okay.
Please come on up. Dan Walsh, Dean Payne, and Corky Collier.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. Our local disclosure rules require that if you're authorized to register, if you're authorized to speak on behalf of a business or an organization, that you need to disclose that when you introduce yourself. You'll have 3 minutes, and that clock on that chunk of wood will help you count down from 3 minutes. We don't want your address, and we don't want your phone number unless you have something that you'd like to promote that's Portland made, in which case we'll give you 15, 20 minutes to testify. No, I'm joking. Would you like to begin?
Sure. Dan Walsh with Walsh Holdings. Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, our first experience with an LID for 109th was very successful. Bids were competitive, and the city was very cooperative in meeting the participating property owners' needs. We've experienced reduced wear and tear on our trucks, improved safety since we now have a real street, and from an environmental standpoint, stormwater is now being treated properly. This new LID for 112th north of Marks and Mark Street between 112th and 109th will prepare the area for future industrial development, along with rehabilitating a road and stormwater system in desperate need for over 20 years. These are difficult economic times to commit to these investments. Our total investment will be over $2 million, and our neighbors have also made large commitments. We all know it's the necessary investment for the neighborhood. We ask the city to continue to work with us as they have in the past to help keep all costs under control and be flexible when administering regulations. And we look forward to the completion of a successful LID.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Dean Payne with Payne Construction. I've been the owner of the property down there for about 6 years now, and I can honestly say I've seen that picture, those pictures you were showing there many, many times. I was not sure I was going to be here today, so I wrote out a statement for Andrew, which is probably better because I am not a public speaker, but you can look at that later. Three things I want to amplify or to specify is the, since I moved in there, the city has given me permission to put a septic system in, which I would really like to get out of there. We're right next to the slough. I'm sure it still drains down there, but that's what we are on right now. So the sewer portion of this project is very important to me, and also probably for Buckaroo Roofing. The other thing, which I mentioned, was prostitution was very rampant down there when I moved in. And basically, I've dealt with that, and now it's down to a minimum. But I really believe this street improvement is going to take care of the rest of that problem. And the drug activity was very, very, very rampant also. I don't know how many times going down to the slough where these deals were going on, and also the prostitution part of it, that I was fully expecting to get shot while I was going down there, but I just go down to get license plate numbers and a description of the car, and finally, after about a year and a half, it quit. So I'm fully in favor of this. I hope I can, being in construction, hope I can find the money to pay for this, but I would really like your approval on this. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your willingness to be part of the community and community policing. We really appreciate that as well. Thank you for being here today, and for someone who's not a public speaker, that was very compelling. Mr. Corrett.
I'm Corky Collier. I'm with the Executive Director of the Columbia Corridor Association. You know, when I think of LIDs, it makes me think back a little bit to sort of like a real early government. You have a bunch of people standing around with a problem. They can't get their vehicles down the road. They need to fix that. They've got stormwater issues. So they get together and they say, all right, let's raise some money. Let's put some money into the pot. Let's fix this road. Let's fix this stormwater problem. And then they look around to the folks a little further out in the outlying areas and said, you're going to benefit from this as well. Can you pitch in a little bit to help us a little bit with it to make the project work? I mean, this is a great example of the basics of good government. And I think this is a great project. But I'm not really here so much to ask for your support of the project. These guys are here for that. And I hope you do support it. I'm really here to, on one hand, thank you, thank the city for, if you approve this, contributing $100,000 toward it. At the same time, hoping I don't sound ungrateful, you know, kind of recognizing, boy, that's a $1,000 to $30,000 leverage. You know, for every dollar the city's putting into it, and there's 100,000 of those, thank you, you know, these guys are putting in $30,000. That's a huge leverage. I mean, we're happy if on a transportation project, the federal government leverages, or we get a 1-to-3 leverage, you know, 1 to 30,000. So it's tremendous. So I'm going to offer a couple of suggestions. One, maybe write them a thank you letter, you know, for saying, you know, we really appreciate what you're doing for the infrastructure of the city. It's self-serving too. They're doing it for themselves, but it does help the city. And I'd love to see more of these sort of projects. And then if you want to go a little bit more, a little bit further, maybe call them up and say, hey, what can we do on somebody else's LID in the future to make this work even better? And then third, give Andrew Abbey a call. This guy's great. He's a wonderful resource for you. Call him up and ask him the same question, because he's doing a great job of working across bureaus and working with the property owners in good faith to make sure that he saves as much money as possible. So those are my suggestions. But overall, really, thank you for supporting this.
All right, anybody else?
Mayor, I have a letter that Bonnie McKnight asked me to read.
You can return to your seats. Let him. I'm going to ask if there's anybody else.
No one else signed up.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you. This letter is from Bonnie McKnight, coordinator of the Columbia Shore Opportunity Group, and it's on behalf of several residents who have been working on many issues for many years, so I wanted to honor them by reading it into the record. From Bonnie McKnight, wants to publicly express thanks to Andrew Abbey, LID manager for the city, for the understanding and responsiveness he has used in developing the Northeast 112th and Marks LID in the South Columbia River Shore area of East Portland. In the late 1970s, before we were administratively annexed into the city of Portland, we had hoped to make this unique regional asset a recreational area in which the environment would provide an economic benefit to our proposed city of Columbia Ridge. We envisioned it as similar to Stanley Park in Vancouver, British Columbia. When we were annexed, this formerly restricted 100-year floodplain was zoned primarily for industrial development. In the past, that has meant an often negative trade-off between industry and the environment. We are wiser now and becoming even more informed that industrial development can thrive in environmental areas and that riverbanks don't have to become separated or degraded areas in a city. Nor do these tracts of industrial land need to develop in a way that will require corrective investment in the future to remedy avoidable problems. A group of us in East Portland have formed the Columbia Shore Opportunity Group to act in support of this new set of values. Andrew Abbey was willing to work with us to understand our concerns and respect them. We are pleased that Andrew has done everything possible to build investment in this area without creating loss of the very real economic value the environment will bring to that change. Please support this local improvement district as a step towards a clearer understanding of the mutual value that can come from creative industrial development where environmental protection becomes a positive part of that change. And I second those sentiments. First, thank you, Andrew, but secondly, thanks to the property owners and to everybody who's worked so hard to make sure that you don't have to choose between environmental protection and industrial development. They can work together and benefit each other.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just wanted to give the mayor a friendly reminder to move the substitute before you vote. Thank you.
So I move the substitute.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the proposed substitute?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Unless there's additional discussion, can you please call the vote on the substituted resolution for item number 73?
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Andrew, for all of your work on this and for the three folks who came to testify today, each giving their own perspective. I do appreciate the investment of the property owners. $100,000 of city money in these tough times is a significant investment also, but still recognizing that we have a lot of work to do to make sure that we can pave and improve areas like this all over the city. But when we do have partners within the community, and again, who are working together at environmentalists and industrialists, that's when it works the best. Aye.
Fish.
Thank you all. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Andrew, and I want to thank Payne Construction and Walsh Holdings. And I think, you know, Andrew, you know, we've had some conversations with Walsh Holdings about, another additional LID that would help improve infrastructure and manage stormwater effectively. So. Thank you for all your good work. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Adams?
Well, to Payne and Walsh, thank you very much in these difficult times. It's great that you're willing to move forward on this. To Corky, the $100,000 we're investing here is a much sought-after $100,000. Trust me. The fact that this part of the region was able to urbanize without requiring up front during those subdivisions that the sidewalk, curbs, gutters, and streets went in, saving the current owners a lot of money. If it had gone in at that time, if it was part of the city at that time, it would have been required. We annexed 30 years ago. We're trying to make up for lost time. That's why the $100,000 is part of the mix. So I want to encourage Andrew to continue the work and thank him for his work in delivering cost-effective projects. Sometimes very difficult projects on LIDs, so appreciate it. Aye. Congratulations. All right, that gets us to, can you please read the title for presentation, item number 74.
Bud Clark Commons, six-month update.
Commissioner Nick Fish. Thank you, Mayor. And just a point of clarification, we originally intended for this to be a 30-minute presentation. Carla will try to keep it less than 30 minutes, but it shows up as 15 minutes on the calendar. Steve and Doreen and Tracy, would you please come forward, and I have a few opening remarks. 6 months ago, on June 2nd, we joined community partners to open the doors of Bud Clark Commons. And we are honored today to be joined by former Mayor Bud Clark. Bud, welcome. Together, we pledged that the doors of Bud Clark Commons would always be open to anyone who needed a hand up. Today, 6 months after the opening of the Commons, we have good news to share with the Council. The partnerships we forged through this project are delivering results, helping us to meet the goals set out in our 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Nick, I apologize. I apologize. We have swag for you guys. I apologize.
There's disruption going on here.
Security.
We house. Don't you ever play Monopoly?
That's really cool.
I apologize, Nick.
Thank you.
And if you've ever played Monopoly.
Thank you.
Okay. That's very cool.
I apologize.
Don't.
How do you follow that?
We all meet at the Goose for lunch, wearing our shirts.
Let me go back just to 6 months ago on June 2nd. We joined community partners to open the doors of Bud Clark Commons. And together we pledged that those doors would always be open to anyone who needed a hand up. Today, 6 months after the opening of the Commons, we have good news to share with the Council. The partnerships that we forged through this project are delivering results, helping us meet our goals in our 10-year plan to end homelessness. Here are a few of the highlights that you will hear this morning. Close to 300 people have moved to permanent homes, including almost 40 veterans. More than 4,300 people have used the Day Center to look for jobs and housing, to take a shower, to check their mail, to do laundry, and more. 130 chronically homeless people, the most vulnerable people in our community, now have a safe place to call home. This award-winning LEED Platinum building celebrates the legacy of former Mayor Bud Clark. He was Portland's first mayor to make homelessness an issue of citywide concern. He issued Portland's first 12-point plan on homelessness. And 25 years later, we are still building on his pioneering work. This development is also a shining example of the city's stalwart commitment to affordable housing. Through our 30% set aside for affordable housing, we invested nearly $30 million from the River District Urban Renewal Area. And we could not be successful without the strong support of our Old Town Chinatown neighbors, including residents, businesses, and others who've stepped up to help us in this fight to end homelessness. We have two panels of guests today representing a variety of stakeholders. In the first panel, I'll ask our major project partners to briefly share their perspective. Next, I'll invite a group of people who have interacted with Bud Clark Commons on the ground to tell us about their experience. It is my pleasure this morning to welcome our first panel, Tracy Manning, the director of the New Portland Housing Bureau, Steve Rudman, Executive Director of Home Forward, formerly the Housing Authority of Portland, and Doreen Binder, Executive Director of Transition Projects. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Council, very much for your commitment to this building. I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity to participate in the six-month update. And as Commissioner Fish referenced, this is a great story of partnerships. We have our very long-term mission-driven local partners here with us, Transition Projects and Home Forward. And there's also a story about our partnerships with our community health clinics. They've demonstrated the powerful role that healthcare can play in ending homelessness. I've been working on homeless issues downtown for quite a while, so I can attest to the positive impact that this building has had. Uniquely, they have screened in people that everyone else screens out, quickly brought care to the most vulnerable homeless people, those very likely to be injured or even die on the street. And all three of us have forged wonderful partnerships with our community, as the Commissioner referenced. But today, it's my job to put a spotlight on the work of Home Forward and Transition Projects. Later, you'll hear from Mark Hillman, active member of the Pearl Rotary Club and a volunteer with Transition Projects at Bud Clark Commons, Mike Boyer from the City Office of Neighborhood Involvement, and John Dye, a resident at Doreen's Place. So Steve Rudman is here, Executive Director of Home Forward. Home Forward is unique in that they're a funding partner as well as an experienced owner, manager, and developer. They made a contribution of rent assistance, without which this project wouldn't have been successful. But they also brought their expertise in building development and management to create this facility, cornerstone of our 10-year plan to end homelessness. So Steve will talk about the 130 units of permanent supportive housing. And then Doreen Binder is here, Executive Director of Transition Projects, another very, very long-term partner in the city with the city in ending homelessness. They operate 240 city-funded beds throughout the city for homeless folks. And the Bud Clark Commons was built to replace their facility at Gleason Street that was worn out and overcrowded. And now they've been able to move those 90 beds to the new facility, half of which serve veterans. And then in addition, they operate the day center, which the commissioner referenced, is seeing about 600 people a day with the showers, the laundry facilities, the lockers, et cetera. So without further ado, Steve Redman.
Thank you, Tracy. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Steve Redman, Executive Director of Home Forward. I'm pleased to be here today. We are a proud partner with the city and Transition Projects on the Bud Clark Commons, and we were pleased to be able to build and own the building. And we also serve as the manager for the facility and operate the apartments, as Tracy mentioned. The vision for the apartments was twofold. First, to create a home for people who have not had the opportunity to live inside for a very long time. And second, to help them become stable in their new homes. With the city's leadership, as Tracy mentioned, we really decided to prioritize those with the highest needs, men and women who are at the greatest risk if they continue to live outside. This is actually the first time that public housing dollars have been used for this kind of housing first harm reduction model for chronically homeless people in the country. As Tracy alluded to, we have this vulnerability index that we work with our partners, the four health clinics, Central City Concern, Outside In, NARA, and Multnomah County, who determine when people come in, priority based upon their health and cognitive issues, and the ones who are most vulnerable get highest on the list. First residents moved in during June, and we leased up by the fall. We now have a full building and a range of services at the apartments. There's four main components: ongoing health care provided by the primary health care providers I just mentioned, mental health care services provided by Cascadia Mental Behavioral Health. They have enrolled 39 people at the apartments, and they actually 20 folks who came in also were already enrolled. And we believe as people feel more comfortable in their home, they gain some trust, more folks will enroll in mental health services as well. Outside In also provides benefits recovery assistance, so folks who are eligible for Social Security disability can receive an income. Hope I haven't made this sound a little too easy. This is really gritty work. It's very hard for our staff, led by Rachel Duke, who is here. It requires a daily focus on eviction prevention, community building, case management, crisis intervention. And the 130 apartments at Bud Clark Commons are unlike any of the 6,200 units we own or manage. They require 24-hour staffing a day, all of the services I just described. To do this successful, it really requires system alignment. And with the city's leadership, between the city and TPI, Home Forward, Community Health Clinics, Cascadia, and other partners, I think we're actually making it possible for folks that really have less to look at a future that could be successful for them. In closing, I really want to thank Commissioner Fish and all of you for your leadership. You really have helped our community by creating, first, a remarkable building, but it's also a unique one-stop resource center, the day center, the shelter, the apartments. And more importantly, you have helped create a place that is really helping the most vulnerable people in our community rebuild their lives. We know that this is not a panacea. We actually know that homelessness has increased. However, this is a moment, I think, to reflect on the significant commitment a locality, the city of Portland, has made, and it's making a difference. So I thank you for all of you have done and for your continued support as we work to realize the shared vision of Bud Clark Commons. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Welcome, Doreen.
Doreen Binder, Transition Projects, Mayor and Commissioners. I forgot how much I like being here. It's nice to see you all. I do, first of all, want to thank you, Nick, for we had this. This project was in the making for a long time, but without you, this would not have happened. But it, again, it's all of you. The commitment that you made during a very rough time in our economy, you know, nationally, not only citywide, but nationally, was I really commend you for making that hard decision and supporting the work that we do. It has, as Steve and Tracy both said, it's made a marked difference on the streets of Portland. It has, I think our neighbors are pleasantly surprised that it's working, and Rachel and Billy Kemmer from our organization does an incredible job of working with the neighbors and making sure things go well. We have, as Nick was saying, we have seen in 6 months over 4,000 people walk into our organization. I'm not quite sure if it's unduplicated. I'd like to tell you that it's not, but I think it is. We've housed 300 people in the last 6 months. And what's most importantly is not only that we've housed the people, but the retention rates are higher than they've ever been. We've made a commitment. You've made a commitment to us, and we've made a commitment into the community that we will work as hard as we can to not only place people into housing, but to keep them there. One of the issues that we work with people who have lived on the streets is the isolation once they've been placed into housing. And it's really important for us to maintain that relationship with people. And through the day center and the retention groups and the staff that we're able to have, we're able to do that. And what was once, I think, 40% or lower of retention, because we didn't have that support, is now 80% to 90% people staying in housing. So I want to thank you again for that, and I want to really thank my staff for doing the great job that they do. As Steve said, though, these are economic times, and we still have over 300 people, 300 men on our wait list and 120 women on our wait list to get into our facilities. With a little push from Sally Erickson and from Tracy's group, we're getting better at placing people more quickly into housing. And so the turnover rate in shelter is 60 to 70 days as opposed to what it was 6 or 7 months in the past. So I think we're doing a much better job at that. We also, the building, when we proposed the building a long time ago, years ago it seems, we also knew that we couldn't do it all ourselves. You know, and not only that we didn't have the expertise, but of course there's not the money to do this. So we went to the county and we went to the city and we said, who are the partners that you provide funds for and how do we bring them into the building to partner? So we have Multnomah County Library, we have the Health Department, we have LifeWorks, we have Central City Concern and JOIN and all the other programs that are partners with us in the building to create a more comprehensive support system for people that we're working with. And I think that's the way that we're able to, not only through our hard work, but our partnerships, able to get people into housing and keep them there. And one last thing I want to tell you, that when we built this building, we saw this as not only a building, we didn't want it to be a building for homeless people, we wanted it to be a building for individuals who live in our community. Some of which are living on the streets, and some of which are not. And so we have these wonderful community rooms. Nick was there when we had the Food Policy Network meet there. We've had the Old Town Chinatown Business Association meets there on a regular basis. We've had Lewis and Clark Alumni of Color Advisory Board, Kaiser Permanente, and the most interesting group that came there actually was Pendleton did an advertising shoot in the multipurpose room. So the building is being used for multiple purposes which we wanted. And what's more important is that not that it's being used for multipurposes, but that people accept the building and accept the purpose that it was built for. And they don't have an uncomfortableness walking in that building because they support the work that we do, and they not only support the work that we do through saying, okay, you can spend the money, but by participating in the building and using it. So I want to thank you again, and again to Steve and Tracy for the incredible work and the partnerships. And Nick, thank you. You've done a great job.
Thank you all very much.
That's a question.
Sure.
Okay. So I just had a question. I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't know this, but
no, I'm fine.
Any of you, but you mentioned a vulnerability index you use for admission to housing, and so I was just wondering if you could sort of describe sort of what the prototypical most vulnerable male and most vulnerable female, sort of what would be attributes of those.
Sure.
It's a great question, particularly because Commissioner Saltzman, this approach is not without controversy, and so. Rachel, welcome.
Hi, Rachel Duke with Home Forward. So we found a vulnerability index tool. We looked around for some best practices and found one in Seattle that we really liked with another organization called the Downtown Emergency Services Center. And they organize vulnerability based on 10 different factors. And some of those factors are around physical health, how likely you are to die on the street, kind of what your health problems are. Some of the factors are around mental health, substance abuse, kind of history of being assaulted or beat up, how well you're able to meet your basic needs. Like, some people are more able to navigate the soup kitchen system than other people. And everyone gets ranked using that tool, and then the people who score the highest are the people who we house first. And so typically, they're folks who have most of those issues.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I can also say it's a bittersweet part of our work that the number of people that screened at the highest of the vulnerability index and that were housed have subsequently died. And I think what we have to acknowledge is that the difference is for some people, rather than dying on the street, they died in their own home. It's a bittersweet part of our work because we choose people who are very vulnerable, including people that have terminal illness.
Right. So we've had 5 people pass away since we opened in June. I agree that it's been great for those. If someone's going to die, to be dying inside, to not be dying living while you're homeless is definitely an improvement.
Thank you very much.
Can I want one more thing?
We got to keep.
I want to just say that that Bud is here.
Don't worry.
How could we possibly forget?
Irene is always leading.
So
always leading.
I have another panel to invite up to my colleagues at Exhibit Tab 74. We put together a one pager that summarizes the information we're sharing with you today. That I encourage, and we had it hand delivered as well. But it's a sort of a snapshot of the presentation. Our second panel today, if you could please come up, John Dye. John is a resident of Doreen's Place, and we're really honored to have him join us today. Mark Hillman, the community service chair for the Portland Pearl Rotary Club, and Michael Boyer, a crime prevention coordinator with the city's Office of Neighborhood Involvement. And this is our last panel, but we've asked these three gentlemen to give the other a complimentary perspective on our work, and we'd like to begin with a resident, because ultimately, while this is a beautiful and functional and sustainable building, it was designed to provide a place where people could be served and where lives could be changed. And John, thank you for taking time to join us today. Welcome.
Zawan Nihoma, Dikanasyasu. You wouldn't expect to hear a foreign language from a homeless person. I didn't expect to become a homeless person. I was greatly unprepared for what occurred. Without the assistance of TPI and the assistance from you and actually the whole city of Portland, myself and a number of other people would be in a very bad situation, to say the least. Thanks. They asked me to tell you how I got here, what services Bud Clark has offered to me, and how they turned my life around. You don't have time to hear how I got here, but it was through some very devastating situations that can befall anybody at any time, including yourselves. Fire and death were included in both. More importantly, I'm here now. And I was grossly unprepared to discover how quick our society discriminates against us if we don't have our current ID. In Oregon particularly, you can have an ID from another state, and it's insufficient to get a lot of services here simply because it's an out-of-state ID. Unlike Alaska, where I came from most recently, you also have a very expensive ID here, which I'd like to let you know that Bud Clark Services helps people get, and it's instrumental in doing anything further in your city or state. Most people, myself included, have no idea at all what homeless people go through. I'm a former Marine and a carpenter of over 20 years. I've worked in some of the finest houses in San Francisco. I thought people with backpacks were either tourists, hobos, bums, or campers. And I only thought I fit in two of those categories. And I was wrong. I fit in all. Not by choice. Coming here without having the resources that have been given to me by you guys and TPI, I would without a doubt be sleeping on the street. And I wouldn't have made connections with the VA, which provides medical help and a plethora of other things. Many of the homeless people you see aren't there because they want to be there, and most wish to do something and be productive. But the economy has put us into a situation where it's very difficult for carpenters to get work. It's even more difficult for carpenters without their ID, without their glasses, without clothing that they may have lost in some catastrophe. The Bud Clark Center offers all of those things to people, as well as meals, a place to sleep, and most importantly, dignity. It's not easy to come before a distinguished panel like yourself and admit that you are currently unable to sustain yourself. But it happens. We don't like to admit we're getting older either. And I can assure you, in the last five job interviews I've been given, they didn't specifically say that it was because of my age that they couldn't hire me, but they didn't infer age was more of a liability than an asset. We live in a time when experience is no longer a sufficient amount, that not being a liability, not being someone that you might have to pay a higher insurance rate for or whatever. And we're not prepared to do job searches when we've worked in the same job for 20 years. And I would challenge that most of you, if we put you on the street tomorrow without your ID, without your suit, and put you on a sleeping bag and had to confront your local law enforcement for why you were sleeping on the street, would be woefully unprepared for what you would confront or be confronted by. When you go to a center like this, one, they take that risk away. And two, they give you a schedule and a plan and an opportunity to move forward and to re-enter society and to be productive again. They said, how did I change or turn my life around? Well, as yet, I haven't turned my life around. I don't feel that my life needed to be turned around. It just needed to get more order. They've helped me a great deal with that. For those of you that are optically challenged, I'm a negative 800. They've helped me with glasses. I didn't have a local ID. They've helped me with a local ID. I have never had unemployment before. I have never been out without my own place to live. But spending 5 years in Alaska and coming here, you don't have a great deal of background. And most renters here, when you tell them, where have you lived for the past 5 years? I've lived in the bush in Alaska. They roll their eyes, and you're not getting rented to. The connections and the temporary housing that you guys offer through these programs stabilize people. Give those that are willing and want to get back into society an opportunity to do so. You may wonder if the money's well spent. Desperate people do desperate things. I would submit to you that many people that commit crimes, this guy is quite well familiar with, would not do a lot of those crimes if they had other ways to sustain themselves, but they were desperate and they did desperate things. This prevents desperation. This gives people a chance to represent themselves, straighten out their lives, get the things they need, and become less of a risk to society. So, in closing, I'd just like to say thank you very much for the opportunity. (Clears throat) and the risk you've taken. And I'd like you to know, I personally feel it was very worthwhile and can't thank you enough.
Thank you very much for your testimony. It was incredibly well said and amazing in its ability to inspire. So thank you. Sir?
This is my first time here, so I want to say thank you very much for having
me. Just need your name.
Sorry, my name's Mark Hillman, and I'm with the Portland Pearl Rotary Club. So during the construction phase of the Bud Clark Commons, our club noticed that there was a lot of chatter and buzz in the community, a lot positive, some negative, and very much misinformed. So we took it on as a club. We wanted to dig in, and we really wanted to gain a firsthand understanding, not from the media and not from secondhand stories, but we wanted to go in. We wanted to talk to employees, and we wanted to know what happens under that roof. Beautiful building, but where's the meat? What goes on there? So as a club, we really wanted to learn more about this commitment from the city and learn about solving this major issue. Our club is fully committed to support the Bud Clark Commons through service and what we feel more importantly, spreading the word and spreading awareness of homelessness issues in Portland in particular. We see that our role is to connect the Portland community with the operations of the building, its residents, and its employees. So far this year, we've completed two major projects in conjunction with the Bud Clark Commons. The first has been a clothing drive where we have engaged not only our Rotary Club, but other Portland Rotary Clubs and the community at large to donate mostly business attire and clothing that could be used for interviews and for work. And the amazing thing, this was about a three-month clothing drive, and it ended in October. And I've been getting phone calls still from the PTA members at Lincoln High School and various members of the community saying, hey, we don't want to donate our clothes to Goodwill. Where can we take it? So I think it's been really inspiring to see how folks in the community have really grasped the building. Secondly, we provide a meal service once a month, and we previously did this at the Clark Center, but we moved to the Bud Clark Commons recently. Last Wednesday was our first meal service. This gives us an excellent opportunity to get engaged with residents, with employees, and filter through our club members, get them inside the building so they gain a firsthand understanding of what happens, operations, and we make connections. To take it to a next level, we're trying to bring in local food and establish unique connections where we can get beyond that first level of service and really get involved. In conclusion, I want to say that my involvement with the Bud Clark Commons has changed my perspective on homelessness. I'm inspired that we can come together as a community at all different levels and drive change. And I think one of the most beautiful things that I've noticed since the Bud Clark Commons has opened is our people in the community's willingness to embrace the building and, more importantly, embrace the issue at hand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's great.
Thank you. Mayor, the next panelist is Michael Boyer. And as the council knows, we spent a lot of time hammering out a good neighbor agreement with the community. And we listened carefully to the concerns people had about the potential impact of this development. And we engaged people. And I think it was one of the most thoughtful and constructive processes that we've been involved with as a city, as a bureau. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. As Commissioner Fisk said, my name is Mike Boyer. I'm a crime prevention coordinator for the downtown Old Town and recently Pearl District neighborhoods. The Good Neighbor Agreement process is really my first entry into working with the Bud Clark Commons, and I was thoroughly impressed. It was a process led by Resolutions Northwest. They did a fantastic job facilitating it, but what really made it work was the involvement from Bud Clark Commons, their ability, the staff's ability to take the concerns and the feedback, however unfiltered it may have been, and listen to that feedback and take proactive and constructive measures to ensure the building is going to have a positive impact on safety and livability. Speaking here, I'll keep my comments brief because I certainly can't outdo the speakers that have come before me and John Thank you very much. Those were some powerful words there. The theme I think we've all heard today is that Bud Clark Commons works. And on my end, it works because of the communication. As everybody, especially Rachel Duke and Billy Keemer, the staff there, they step up to the table. They listen to the concerns that are addressed from the community, and they come and they problem solve. They've been involved in on the resident side on a program called Enhanced Safety Properties, which is a formalized partnership between a property management company, police bureau, and the crime prevention program, where we do trainings for the residents, look at the building.